So you could identify where that bone loss is happening, because we both know that it's probably happening a little earlier than 50. We don't look at it until 50. Okay, that's a big problem, right? So trying to fix someone's bones when they're 50.
Hi, let's decode bone health and bone density together. I'm Dr. Valerie Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Robert Mackey from Progress Your Health. So this one, we're gonna talk about three separate people today. I believe you got them on social media somewhere, TikTok or Instagram?
Yeah, on my TikTok, Dr. Valerie D on TikTok, I had three comments about a video that I did on DEXA scans, T-scores, and bone density, and how to read a DEXA scan. So I thought we might just kind of discuss them a little bit.
Yeah, we'll kind of take three and kind of combine them all into one and kind of break them down and we'll go from there.
Yeah, because these are beautiful examples, because lots of women right around the same age, some women can have, you know, bone density that's great. But honestly, a lot of us, especially when we're in menopause, you know, I'm 52, you want to really look at that bone health. So you're really preparing at 50 for what it's going to be when we're 70.
Right.
So, you know, looking at that, and everybody's different. Some people that are more petite, they have a lower bone peak mass when they're in their 30s. So they really need to work on that bone health, and other women don't. So I really liked these comments here. So they're short. I'll read them. They're pretty short and sweet here. So this one is, okay, I'm trying to understand my most recent DEXA. I'm confused, but I think based on what you're saying, I might be good. I'm 52 and my T-score is a positive 0.8 and my Z-score is 1.3. I was mostly concerned about my bones and muscle composition after losing weight. That was one of the comments. And the next one is, I'm negative 3.8 T-score. Is it reversible? And then the other one is, I'm 51 with a T-score of negative 3.7. I'm lost and I don't know where to start. I feel like this is the perfect storm for me because I have a family history, I did have a vitamin D deficiency. I have rheumatoid arthritis, been on steroids, had surgical menopause at 30 years old, but I'm on HRT. So these are kind of like three different examples, but it's kind of, I just thought it'd be nice to kind of pick that apart a little bit.
Yeah. 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 Definitely. When you go to the doctor, they read the impression. They tell you whether you have normal bone density, you have osteopenia, you have osteoporosis, and they don't really explain those numbers very well. And so you don't really know what that even really means. They just sort of tell you something, and then you're sort of left to figure it out on your own.
Yeah, and then it says things like you have this many percentage of a fracture, and you're in this, and it can be actually kind of disturbing to read your own DEXA scan.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't know how to kind of read through that, or someone takes the time to explain it to you, and it says you have increased fracture or a risk of fracture, which can lead to all cause mortality, that can lead to this. Does that pertain to that person, or is that just like a guideline of some sort? Which is usually what that bad stuff actually is. They're not saying that about the exact person. It's just that this stuff is important. Like you said, not when you're 50 exactly, depending on where your bone density is. When you're 70, you know, plus 75 plus, are you going to be in good shape, or are you going to be frail and, you know, have a problem? I was just talking with a patient just the other day, and she just turned 70 this year, and she fell. Her dog kind of tripped her a little bit, and she sort of like, you know, hurt all over after she fell, kind of very traumatic. But she, you know, like we talked about, it says, hey, thank God you didn't break anything. Right. So where do you think about the first, or should we start them one at a time, or how do you want to discuss
them? I think we can kind of pick it apart a little bit, you know. So when you're looking at a DEXA scan, the T-score is probably the first thing that you want to definitely look at. Like, that's going to jump out. And zero means there's no bone density loss. That's comparing you to like a healthy 30-year-old female. So for example, this first comment here that says, I think I'm good, because her T-score is a positive 0.8. That means she has positive bone. So that's really good.
Yeah. And but she's the one that was 52, the same age as you.
Yes. So, so she's in her 50s. I think they're all actually, honestly, in their 50s. But the other two, so you think about zero is great. From zero to negative 1.0, actually it'd be negative 0.9. That's considered good bone, no bone issues. But negative 1.0 to negative 2.4 is osteopenia. Mm-hmm. So the beginning of slow, you know, having that bone density go down. Now, granted, a negative 2.4 is a whole lot different than a negative 1.0, but that's still considered the land of osteopenia. Then when you hit negative 2.5 and beyond that, more negative than 2.5, that is osteoporosis. So in the second two comments, that's definitely pointing to osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're doing a DEXA scan, they'll look at your hips, they'll look at your lower back. So, you know, one might be different than the other. But I thought this was a good one because, for example, the gal here that's got a negative 3.7, she has some risk factors that are pointing to why she's got this bone density. Mm-hmm. So, of course, when you're females, once we hit 50, especially with menopause, you know, estrogen, progesterone are so important for bone density. When that declines, then that bone loss can be very accelerated.
Yeah, right.
So that's where, you know, HRT we've always talked about, but there's also factors too. We've done other podcasts on ways to help work on that bone health. But I think a lot of women, like looking at these comments, they get a little confused. Like, is this good? Is this bad? I don't know. Can we reverse it? Is it going to get worse? So the goal with this gal here, which at 0.8, where the T-score is pretty darn good, her goal is let's keep it there. You're good. Let's keep it there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Positive 0.8. That's for a 52-year-old woman, that's very, you know, relatively, I don't know what the statistics or the incidence is, but that would be very uncommon to have a positive bone density.
You know, there's not, once you hit around, your early 50s, I mean, we're female, we're going to inevitably lose some bone. You know, it's just, especially if you're petite, fair, and female, mm-hmm. that's like, you know, characteristic, and then you add on some other risk factors there. But that is really good. So seeing that is
exceptional.
Pretty amazing. Now, the other gals here, you at negative 3.7 and negative 3.8, that's where we're going to need to really consider some intervention, because if they're in their 50s, like we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast, we want to make sure that there's a good bone mass when they hit 70.
Yeah, right. You know, the bone density issue really isn't, for some women, yes, it's an issue in their 50s, but like you said, we're trying to predict, you know, what things are going to be like in another 20 years. Or beyond that, and that's where it becomes sort of, like my patient that had a fall, something as simple as tripping over the dog. We got a couple of them on the floor over there, and now all of a sudden, just a simple accident turns into a catastrophe, mm-hmm. right? So you want to be able to, you know, having the right muscle and the right bone mass, you want to be able to bounce off the floor or bounce off the ground or whatever it might be without having that turn into a major injury. So what do you think? So the one, hers was 3.8, a minus 3.8 for her T-score, rheumatoid arthritis, vitamin D deficiency, and steroid use. If there is any more of a trifecta of how you disintegrate your bones, that's sort of like the vitamin D deficiency, which the steroids cause the vitamin D deficiency. Now your bone density, it's just, sort of gone. So what do you think about that?
Well, you're right. It is kind of like, you know, like she said, I can see where it's the perfect storm. So of course, steroids can save our life.
Yeah.
I mean, steroids have saved many people's lives, but long-term steroid use can really cause that bone density go down, but it's definitely helping with her rheumatoid arthritis, I'm sure. Now the vitamin D deficiency, now vitamin D is super popular. Everybody's talking about it. You can test for it in your blood. You can take, supplementation for that. So taking the vitamin D with the K2, that's super important to help redirect calcium into the bones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good there. But the surgical menopause kind of jumped out at me because she was only 30 years old when she had her ovaries removed. So that immediately took away her hormones. Now it says she's on HRT, but HRT is a whole lot different than your own ovaries cycling.
Yeah. For what, 20 years in her early 30s. So she would have been without hormones for an extra 20 years on top of that. Plus those other factors there. I mean, that's a lot of obstacles to sort of overcome there, from a surgical standpoint, from a medication standpoint, from a nutrition standpoint. There's a lot of things that are happening all at once.
So you think about, she's on HRT. She's probably on static dosing, maybe on an estradiol patch or some progesterone, hopefully on some progesterone, even though she doesn't have a uterus.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But I do feel like that surgical it is the perfect storm. But hey, it is what it is. Where are we going to go from here?
Right,
of course, the highest intervention is doing the medications, which can have a lot of side effects. But that can be something too. But a lot of times the medications don't necessarily grow back bone. So like the one gal's comment of, you know, I'm a negative 3.8. Is this reversible? It's not necessarily that you can go from a negative 3.8 to a zero again. It just really doesn't happen. But the goal is to not go any more negative bone density than they are right now and maybe be able to try to build back some of that bone. Because you and I both with patients have seen negative scores, but they've been able to, in some ways, reverse it, but not completely, but be able to build back some more of that bone density.
So at a minus 3.8, and just review, what are the cutoffs for osteopenia to osteoporosis?
Yeah, so no bone loss at all, is like a 0 to a negative 0.9. Mm-hmm. You hit a negative 1.0, osteopenia, so osteopenia land, negative 1.0 to negative 2.4. Mm-hmm. And then when you hit a negative 2.5, that's where it's considered osteoporosis.
So from a minus 2.8 to a minus 2.5, based on your experience, the goal there isn't to necessarily reverse that, because that's a real wide canyon to cross.
You mean the one that has a negative 3.8 and a negative 3.7?
To go from a negative 3.8 to a minus 2.4, so from osteoporosis to osteopenia, it'd be sort of a little bit of wishful thinking that would actually really be possible. Even conventionally, they would say, like you said, just to stop the progression of the bone loss. Okay. Now, you cannot predict necessarily. Now, granted, in her situation, she does have sort of the perfect storm. Now, I'm assuming the steroids, we don't know the status of that. If there's steroid use with the rheumatoid arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis can be debilitating from a pain perspective, from a joint perspective. I mean, lots of things going on there. To be on chronic steroid use, who knows what that status is. Maybe she's not using the steroids anymore, so sort of the damage is already done. What would be, just based on our experience alone, not looking at the research, nothing like that, because our trends and what we've seen in our patients don't really follow some of that, just because we do different interventions, right? What would you expect in a perfect scenario from a minus 3.8 to a minus 2.4? What kind of progress going backwards could she actually try to attain?
So you mean in terms of like what kind of treatment?
Not even the treatment. Like what would be, let's say, because we can't predict it. Let's say we could get that bone score, the minus 3.8 number, to go closer to zero. Okay. What would you think would be, I mean, anything less than a minus 3.8 would be a huge success. Mm-hmm. But what would you think would be possible there?
I definitely think that with the right intervention, you could easily reverse this a bit, not all the way down to zero. Once you hit 50.
That's what I'm asking you. Just based on your experience, how far backwards? I think it's possible too, but I'm just trying to commit to a number.
I don't think I can commit to a number.
Okay. Well, that's why I'm asking you. Yeah, because I would agree. I think it's sort of hard to do that. If you got it anything less than a 3.8 on any subsequent DEXAs, I think that'd be a huge success. Would you agree?
You mean, so there's a negative, so the one gal with the steroids is a negative 3.7. So
okay.
So you're saying...
Oh, I'm sorry. Then I got to mix up the minus 3.7. So they're relatively the same number.
Yeah, these two here that wrote it down was a negative 3.8 and a negative 3.7. So that's pretty much close to the same.
Yeah.
So I do think, I mean, honestly, even if it didn't go past negative 3.7, negative 3.8.
If it just stayed there.
Sometimes for some women, if there's certain circumstances, is if they can, I'll even say we can keep it exactly where it's at and it never gets worse than it is for the rest of your life, that is a win.
Of course,
yeah. Because that is the thing with osteoporosis, and that's why doctors get so serious about this, is they know, because doctors can get jaded because they see a lot of, a lot of bad things, is like, oh my gosh, you're looking at this thing. They see it change every 2 years when you do the DEXA scan. Or in this case, they probably do it every year. They see it go from a negative 3.4 to a negative 3.5 to a negative 3.6. They just know that's going to happen.
Of course.
So
especially if they're already in their early 50s, what's going to be when they're in their early 70s? Yeah,
so, But for us, we don't necessarily see that because we get in there and we advocate and we create a treatment plan so that, but like I said, with some women that I have, if they can just keep it exactly where it's at, then I call that a win. But I do feel like a lot of women can build back their bone. It does take some work. You know, it does definitely take some work if we can build that up. And part of it is, I think you had mentioned it earlier, is about getting the muscles around the bone strong.
Yeah. Right? Well, I mean, the muscles move the bones. What helps build the muscle also builds the bones. So there's a little bit of synergy there. You know, so from a sedentary perspective, I mean, the more sedentary someone is in a situation like this, those bones are just going to, you know, they're going to erode that much faster. So some type of weight-bearing exercise of some sort. Now, you don't have to, a situation like this, they don't have to become necessarily a gym rat and start pumping iron, you know, necessarily. But some type of resistance or strength training has to be part of this kind of a situation. That plus the right type of nutrition, the right type of supplementation, the right type of hormonal therapy, and now miracles can actually happen. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. So I think it does, like, you know, you want to start with that least intervention before jumping up to medication is looking at the basics. Are they exercising, like walking? So swimming and cycling, those are great to, you know, great for mm-hmm. the muscles, but they're not really going to put any pressure on the bones. And that's what you want to do is put the pressure on the bones, which is going to create that bone to want to grow.
Right.
So walking, you know, I know that there's different facilities people go to and they stand on these fun plates and they wiggle, jiggle, jiggle. And, you know, anything that's going to help that bone, you know, put pressure on the bone.
Yeah.
So that's that foundation. And like you said about the nutrition. So of course, putting in, having an anti-inflammatory lifestyle is important, but taking out the inflammation from your lifestyle. So what would that be? Right. Mm. The big S word.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, sugar or refined carbohydrates, and making sure there's adequate protein, depending on, you know, the size of the woman. Most women should be relatively pretty close between 75 to 100 grams of protein a day. Your bone is basically calcified protein, right? So you need to be able to, you need to eat protein in order for your body to be able to make protein. It needs those pool of amino acids inside of her body. So those building blocks are sort of always there. And you know, as well as I do, eating enough protein on a, you know, you don't have to be, you know, chugging down steaks every day, right? But there needs to be a certain amount of consistent protein intake. And that's the only macronutrient. Now, if you're on social media, everyone's talking about how important protein is. But I think the doctors that are talking about those things, you and I included, we sort of know from a research perspective and how important it becomes, especially now with all the weight loss things that are happening these days. Like you said, the first one that's at a point zero, a positive point, a 0.8, let's call her case study one, right? That, you know, she had lost some weight, so she was worried about her bone density, and nothing, her bones are still in a good shape, where we know that from a, you know, from a, some of the medications that are used these days, the GLP-1s, you know, you might lose some weight, but you're going to lose your bone density and your muscle mass sort of at the same time. That's, that could potentially be a really bad trade-off in another 20 years if you're in your early 50s. And what's going to happen in your early 70s unless you're taking that into consideration as you are doing it?
Exactly. So like you were saying, so the, of course, the foundation, so you've got the nutrition, mm-hmm. you've got the exercise component to it.
Yeah.
And I do feel like stress makes a big, stress is the bull in the china shop. It's stress and sugar, but stress, you know, raises up that cortisol. Cortisol is very catabolic, so it can help, you know, cause people not to sleep. So you don't have that cellular turnover. And I feel like chronic stress and elevated cortisol can also affect our bone density.
Well, if you think about it, cortisol and steroids like prednisone, cortisol is just a weaker version of prednisone, really. Our body makes cortisol. So if we have too much cortisol in the body, then it is sort of mimicking the effects of prednisone to a lesser extent, of course. So if you've got, you know, you don't sleep, you're, you know, metabolically a little bit unhealthy, your cortisol is high all the time because you're stressed out, and you don't sleep, your cortisol is basically eroding your bone faster than if, you know, your cortisol levels were a little bit more, you know, kind of properly diurnal. You're not overproducing it because your stress levels are, you know, minimized.
So that would be one other aspect to look at, especially for these gals that have their T-scores in the negative threes. The higher negative threes is looking at the stress level, the sleep, looking at their nutrition, looking at their exercise, and then, of course, looking at the hormones too. So, you know, the hormones, I think, are a big issue on it. Like, for example, I had a patient, I want to say it was a newer patient that I've been seeing, and I transferred her from HRT static dosing to the rhythmic dosing because of the bone density.
Okay.
Because you're in rhythmic dosing, you're recreating the ovarian cycle and you're able to raise up that estrogen really good. And estrogen is really amazing for the bones. So that was our goal, is being able to get these physiological levels of estrogen, estradiol, yeah, while still being safe, while still keeping her safe, to have an effect on her bone density moving forward.
Yeah, long term, you know, over the next, you know, however many years, potential decades, having a hormone exposure in sort of the proper fashion that mimics a woman's own production, how can that not have a beneficial impact on reducing that kind of inevitable bone loss that's going to happen? I was listening to a podcast the other day. A group of women experts were talking about the same thing you and I have talked about before, about why do we wait so long to start looking at bone density? And why do we do it in our, you know, 50s or 60s? Why is bone density not looked at when a woman is 25 and then tracked? Maybe you only need to do it every 5 years when they're 25. But maybe as they're starting the puberty, you know, 15, 20, 25, you know, why not do it over a period of time? So you could identify where that bone loss is happening, because we both know that it's probably happening a little earlier than 50. We don't look at it until 50. Okay. That's a big problem, right? So trying to fix someone's bones when they're 50, that to me seems like a little bit, you know, pardon the phrase, a little ass backwards. We're waiting until there's a problem to sort of fix that. Where if you were paying attention to that, you know, just through regular primary care, you know, over the course of someone's lifetime, you could catch those issues before they become a problem. And then you wouldn't have such a panic in a woman that is in her early 50s and has a score of a, you know, minus 3.7.
Yeah, or even, you know, this gal here with rheumatoid arthritis, you think, okay, you've got rheumatoid arthritis. That's scary. We've got to take care of that right now.
Sure.
So so your poor joints aren't going to get, you know, have all that inflammation and literally ruin joints where people can't even use their hands anymore with rheumatoid arthritis over time. So of course that's the acute goal, but at the same time, still having in the back of your mind, hey, listen, this is going to have an effect on your bone density. And you know, I'll have a patient that comes in and I'll look across the table at him. I'm like, you're petite, you're little.
Yeah.
So I'm going to think about your bone density a little bit more so than somebody that might have a better peak bone density to begin with.
Sure.
So you're evaluating that as you look at that patient. So it would be the same thing with someone with RA is, okay, we want to save your joints, but at the same time, we want to make sure none of this backfires on us.
Yeah, we don't want to use a therapy or a medication in the short term to create a much potentially, and maybe not a much bigger problem later, but an equally serious problem on the back end. That's why prednisone or any kind of a steroid, you cannot be on it forever and ever and ever because of those sort of collateral damage things. Like you said, they can save your life. Steroids can be highly beneficial in acute situations to drastically reduce inflammation, but it's not a long-term therapy. Something else has to be done there. Maybe we'll circle back around on something like that later. I think of some ideas of how that could have been sort of, you know, kind of redirected, but we'll talk about autoimmunity on another time.
So that's where I liked these comments, because it gave us a little bit of, I want to say, disparity. So the gal that has this perfect bone density, she's obviously lost weight.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that she maintains that bone, because that is one thing.
And muscle.
Yeah, that bone and muscle, because if you lose weight and you're lighter, then you have less, you know, less weight of gravity on the ground. So that's why, you know, you can also lose bone that way, just when you're just, you know, lighter in stature. So that would be one thing where we're going to really work on that muscle. And it did say, it looks like she did a DEXA scan with the bone density, but it also looked at the muscle on there. She didn't put down anything about the muscles, but she was wondering about her muscle composition. So maybe I'll write her a message and say, hey, you know, send me some of those numbers and we can talk about that on the podcast.
Sure.
'Cause that's another thing you can look at is your total overall muscle mass or muscle composition on a DEXA score.
Yeah, right.
Or not a bone density DEXA, but you can do a full body DEXA and look at water, look at muscle, look at bone.
Yeah. Your lean body mass. So differentiating between bone, muscle, and whatever other tissue you have in your body. If you're in a, if you're are trying to lose weight, you're going to be in a deficit most of the time, right? Especially with the medications that are available, that does create a caloric deficit. You cannot build bone or muscle effectively. You're going to inevitably lose bone and muscle. So the goal is, if weight loss is necessary or is part of the initial goal, there has to be a way to minimize how much muscle and bone you're going to lose, because you're going to lose some of it, right? So there's a trade-off there. Again, so we're not creating another problem, you know, on the back end of that. And then, of course, once the weight's lost, how do we maintain that weight loss but now still make sure that the bones and the muscle are either being maintained or potentially going in the right, in the positive direction? And that's, you know, when weight loss is the only priority, that, you know, now if someone needs to lose 100 pounds, weight, like you said earlier about the petite woman, a woman that is closer to her ideal weight already, those are the ones that need to be a little bit more careful when it comes to losing weight, right? Because they're already close to their goal weight. They're trying to lose 10, 15, 20 pounds. They could potentially accelerate the muscle and the bone loss. If someone needs to lose 100 pounds, because of the gravity, because of the weight they have, they don't have as much to worry about. Okay, at least not in the short, long term. They have a little bit more of an advantage there. So they could be at a deficit a little bit longer, and it wouldn't be as catastrophic for a woman that is just trying to lose, you know, 20.
For the bone density.
For the bone and the muscle.
Yeah, for the bone and the muscle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's how you'd look at it here. Now, for these gals that have a negative 3.8 and negative 3.7 T-score, saying, oh, I wish we had looked at your bones 20 years ago is sort of annoying. Like, well, don't tell me that. Yeah. What can we do now?
Sure, sure. Of course. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Why are those things not done? You know, to learn from situations like that, you know, so we don't repeat those kinds of things over and over and over. It's like, look at it earlier. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me why we wait so long to look at these things. They're like, oh my God, now there's a problem. Well, you know, it just doesn't make any sense.
So that's where I would recommend, because I know a lot of insurance companies, end up wanting to do DEXA scans every 2 years. I would encourage these two or patients that I have that actually do have, you know, osteoporosis, I say, let's do it every year. It's not that much money to pay it out.
A few hundred bucks. Yeah. There's plenty of imaging places that'll, you know, you can walk in cash, and you might need a doctor's requisition to do it, or a request from a doctor to do it. But even still, I mean, you know, probably you could probably get a DEXA like that for probably less than $300 in most places in the country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not that much. And I think even DEXA, whatever DEXA month, they do discounts at different radiology places. But you think, okay, I give my DEXA scan. I'm really disappointed. My bone density's not great. And then I'm going to have another bone density score, you know, in 2 years. So what is it? 2025. I'm going to get another one in 2027. And, you know, life gets in the way and things happen and things are stressful, and you start to maybe start off really good with that exercise and that food and the supplementation, and then you kind of wane off. That's why I always say, let's do it every year, so that they have that accountability to know, sure, I'm going to do another one in a year, because it is really hard to build bone. It really is.
So
doing it every 6 months.
And building muscle too. It's very hard.
Don't do a DEXA scan every 6 months. It's not going to, you know, you're not going to see that much change. But in a year, we can get some progress, or at least, like I said, keep it a win that we don't lose any bone.
Yeah. Yeah. So there, you maintain some of that, you know, proximity to the, you know, information or the data to increase motivation, because now it's on your mind. Now, we have seen some people that have sort of really embraced this whole bone density thing and have completely changed lifestyle, and they have incredible changes to their bone density. I've seen some ones over the years that are, you know, again, you're doing a regimen specifically for bone density, you know, prevention or loss prevention. I don't know how you'd word that, you know, but again, lifestyle, nutrition, supplementation, and hormones, that kind of combination, you know, can really have a pretty major impact, you know, on getting those scores from the, you know, from the really low, you know, minus 3.7, minus 3.8, just actually start going in the right direction.
Yeah. So that's why I like to look at sort of the disparity of these examples. So, you know, the first one, bone density is good. Awesome. Our goal is to maintain.
Yeah.
But the other ones, it's like, this is going to be your top priority, because you do not want those, that negative 3.7, negative 3.8 to continue.
Yeah.
We want, so that would be the top priority on these two sort of cases or what we see in our practice.
Yeah, sure. So the first one, the one that is at a positive 0.8, right? That's incredible. I would assume then from that standpoint, lifestyle must be pretty good. Nutrition must be pretty good. Supplementation must be pretty good for her to be in her early 50s and have such a good score. Would you agree?
Yeah, exactly. And her probably peak bone mass when she was 30 was just great. Maybe it doesn't run in her family.
Maybe she was an athlete or something when she was younger.
Like a, you know, walkers, hikers, joggers always tend to have, you know, good bone density just because of that body weight on the ground for so long. So that would be a nice one for maintaining. But the other two would be like, okay, that's why a lot of people, they wear the weighted vests, you know, because they're putting more weight on the ground when they go for their walk.
Yeah.
You wear a backpack when we go walking, but that's only so he can carry all my stuff.
Well, you got a lot of stuff to carry, but I'm carrying my stuff plus your stuff. I'm just walking.
I know I should carry my own stuff, huh? Why isn't she carrying her own stuff?
Of course not. No, I'd carry all your stuff. You didn't need to carry it. But honestly, over the summer, now we're in Washington, so now the rain's coming. So of course our mileage that we do on a weekly basis gets a little bit reduced because, you know, you look at the rain outside and it's like, darn it, I don't want to go out there.
I pulled the rain pants out.
We got the rain gear, but even still,
it's not as fun.
Well, it seems like our summer went from like really nice summer days to like, you know, gray and wet like right away. Now, this weekend's going to be really nice. But then you start to get a little shack wacky because you're stuck inside all the time. So then by December, January, February, it's like, I don't care. I'm going outside, mm-hmm. right? So then, like I said, you got to bring out the rain gear.
We're spoiled here. I mean, it never really freezes, so it's just rain. You put on a rain jacket. I can feel for people that live in like the Midwest of you know, in the United States where we live. Like it gets so. I don't think I could go walking in that. Under 30.
I lived in that kind of weather, and believe me, that's why I live on the West Coast because we don't live anywhere near, you know, actual real winter because I spent my whole childhood, you know, I moved away when I was 25, and if I never lived through another winter, like a full winter, it'd be fine by me because it's just too cold for too long. You can walk in the rain, you can be outside. I mean, honestly, for us, like a weather day is like 30 degrees if it's cold. I mean, that's fine.
And that's fine. It doesn't get that cold.
But usually we're like somewhere between in the winter, even, you know, 35 to 45.
Yeah,
you know,
35
today it's
to
50. 50. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah,
it's not so, bad. So. Like I said, I got the rain pants out. We're going to get on out and do the walking.
But the walking, my point of bringing up the walking, it wasn't about the weather, it was about the walking that over the summer we walked. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many miles do you think we actually put in on a weekly basis? 50 plus? I mean, we walked a lot pretty much all summer because the weather was so nice.
So
we're walking, you know, 6-7 miles at a time, 7-8 miles at a time, sometimes 12 miles at a time, just because it's nice to be outside. We got the animals that are with us. The weather is gorgeous. It's 75 degrees, and I end up losing, I don't know, probably close to, you know, 10, 11 pounds just from walking. Mm-hmm. Like literally just, you know, it just sort of just fell off. But we did log a tremendous amount of miles. Mm-hmm. You can't just walk for 20 minutes and expect that to happen, right? And even from a bone density perspective, you know, walking is one thing your body adapts to very easily. So the only problem with that, in order to get the health benefit, is you just have to keep walking. Mm-hmm. You know, frequency and the distance have to sort of be maintained. You know, even the 10,000 steps, what's that, 5 miles? Mm-hmm. It even has to be consistently sort of more than that in order to have that, you know, sort of metabolic effect that you want.
What do you think about walking 20 minutes, but maybe a few times a day? You know, like, oh, I got 20 minutes before my next client, or I have a lunch break. I'm going to go walk for 20 minutes and then after work. Like, what do you think about having it in little spurts?
Yeah, there's some research.
Bone density.
Yeah, right. There's some research to support that. Not only bone density, but there's some research to support blood sugar control too, because now you eat a meal, you go for a walk, right? Because now that blood sugar goes down right away. You know, having high blood sugar in your bones is not a good combination. You know, there's a kind of a, you know, kind of a way that your, you know, your blood sugar and insulin sort of erode your bones as well. So yeah, 20 minute walk here and there, because that's all the time you have at the moment. Absolutely a great thing. You know, so you don't have to go on a marathon session, you know, for 12 miles at a crack like you and I have done. you could easily break that up to a morning, evening, a morning, afternoon, evening sort of a thing and just go for 15, 20 minutes, especially if you did it after meals. Because now you eat a meal, your blood sugar goes up, you go for a walk, your blood sugar comes down. And if anyone that's ever used a CGM, you'll see your blood sugar drop as you start logging those miles, your blood sugar will come down in real time. Then the burden of carbohydrates doesn't become a burden because your body kind of gets rid of all that extra glucose. If you're eating all day long, carbs for breakfast, carbs for lunch, carbs for dinner, and you're doing no movement, your body has this surplus of extra glucose that has nothing to do with it. Okay, so then it gets stored as fat. It starts to overwhelm your mitochondria, this powerhouse in our cells, and now we start having metabolic dysfunction as a result of that. So your 3 20-minute walks a day, I think, is a great idea. It solves a few different things there that are going to bode well when, like I said, when someone's in their 70s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but nowadays, now I realize where we live now, we used to live out, kind of out a little bit more in the country. Now we live in a little bit more urban environment. I thought we used to walk a lot before, but now we walk 10 times the amount that we used to, but now we don't drive anymore. Like, mm-hmm. we literally just walk everywhere.
Yeah, we walk to the office here.
Yeah. We just live like right around the corner, and we walk to the market, we walk to the post office, we walk to the office, we walk to the beach, and we walk. That when you think about American lifestyle, nobody really, I mean, unless you're in an area like New York City or sort of an urban environment, they're the only ones that understand that. You and I used to have an office in San Francisco, and people there wouldn't even have cars. Mm-hmm. They'd literally rent them. They'd either rent cars or they'd just get rid of it because it would just, they'd pay too much for parking. I'm sure the same thing happens in New York City or downtown Chicago or, big urban areas. You might have a car there, maybe, but I knew a few people that just got rid mm-hmm. of it because it just would sit there, all the time. And, why do they need the expense? If they needed a car, they just go rent one, mm-hmm. Which I think, we drive a little bit more now in the fall than we did in the summer. We didn't drive. I mean, I think our truck sat there for like a month at a time before we drove it. I mean, it was just wonderful. It was mm-hmm. really nice. It was just really simple. But then where we lived before, I mean, we drove constantly. But it seemed normal, right? Because that is a normal part of American lifestyle, just to get in your car and drive everywhere. And now we don't, now it's just a perspective that I wouldn't have had before. So I'm saying for you and I, the walking has been really nice and enjoyable. We like to do that. But from a bone density perspective, now we're doing a nice thing for our bones and our muscles over the long term.
It sounds like in our blood sugar and probably our cortisol. So I guess it comes down to getting some walking in.
That's just an easy place to start, yeah. right?
And there's supplements too. So like supplements for bone density, but I feel like the basics are probably more the foundation. Of course, the vitamin D, like this gal was talking about, making sure to get your vitamin D and K2 if you can do that. And then I know calcium is kind of a little bit overrated. It used to mm-hmm. be take 1,200 milligrams of calcium. That's a lot of calcium. And then it, if you take the vitamin D with the K2, then that helps direct it more into the bones. But I try to promote more calcium through foods.
Yeah. And there's some, especially for the ones that have the minus 3.7, the minus 3.8 scores, there's some other supplementation ideas there you could do. Certainly that, we did a couple of other podcasts that kind of go through some of those nutrients. Certainly a more of a bone specific formula would probably be a very good idea. A vitamin D test, 60 to 80, she'd want her to, her numbers or her blood level to be on the upper end of that range. I think from a functional medicine, natural medicine perspective, I think there's a lots of things that can do to actually literally legitimately improve those numbers.
Absolutely. Okay.
Now you can't predict, like I try to get you to nail you down on a number and mm-hmm. and I agree.
Everybody's different.
Yeah. You can't really say, okay, well, it's going to improve this much. That's sort of why I asked you that, because it's hard to say, but if you got any better score than a minus 3.8 or a minus 3.7 on subsequent DEXAs, anything better than mm-hmm. that would be a miracle.
Yeah. It'd be incredible. I think you could, like you said, using the naturopathic modalities and functional, doing the functional health. I really think you could reverse a negative 3.8, not down to a zero, probably not down to a negative 2.5.
Yeah. Probably not down to osteopenia.
You could get it a whole lot closer to 3 or the high 2s,
yeah.
but you have to put the work in, it's not just, I'm going to take some calcium or you know,
or even just take a medication that's going to fix it.
Even if you're going to go to the medications and hey, right, that's the top of the intervention. But for some people, that's the right intervention for them. Yeah, right. They still need to do the work.
Yeah. Even if you do those things, you know, as part of your regimen, those other lifestyle things still have to sort of be there. And then you create some synergy across all, you know, across the board. So, this is, you know, these were interesting, you know, pretty much women in the same age range. And now granted, two of them are pretty similar. Mm-hmm. So you have one end of the spectrum versus the other end of the spectrum for women that are in their 50s. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, so a lot of factors that go into that, that determine good bone density versus not. So
I appreciate all the comments that come on the TikTok and our Instagram and all our social media handles. So I certainly appreciate that. This was really great.
Yeah. So any last comments? We close this one out.
Nope. I think this was good.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.